Simon Craig is an environmentalist and he spent some time in the rainforests of British Columbia in Canada. And he makes furniture as well in a very traditional way. And I've come to Somerset to catch up with him, find out how it's done. And first off, we're going in search of wood.
So do you know what you're looking for?
Yeah.
Down here?
I'm looking for a little ash coffin, which we've just found. And the way you tell that it's ash is that ash has black buds.
Uh-huh.
It's the only tree that has black buds like that.
So what are the particular properties of ash that...
It's very flexible and strong. It's a hard wood, but it's very flexible. It's got lots of movement in it.
Hmm.
And you can actually move it around quite a lot before it will break. If you're developing woodland... To my mind, the best way of doing it is to allow it to do it as it would naturally. So you almost leave it, let it generate brambles, and then if you're actually going to plant species in there, rather than just see what comes up, yeah, then you make little paths back into the brambles. You plant your trees amongst the brambles, and then they'll actually be forced to grow straight up. And that is the environment that most of our woodlands would have developed from.
Mm.
Those,
mm. A bit wiggly.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that because the bottom of it, all I want is about three or four foot from the bottom.
Hmm.
So I'm actually probably going to take it off where it starts to wiggle anyway. We'll just shave it down to the size that we want.
So from the point of view of the well-being of the tree, it's absolutely fine.
Well, yeah, because I mean, in this case, you actually, the chances of that tree become, it depends on what you want. See, if you're after timber, then you have to have your trees spaced wide enough apart that you allow enough light in so that the tree, takes over that space and gets as big as possible.
Mm.
If you're after ash poles, well, that's actually a relatively ideal situation to do ash poles in, because you're growing everything close together, and that thing, they're all competing for that little bit of light. So they'll grow straight and quickly. So it does depend on how you plant your woodland or how you plan your woodland. It does depend on what you want to grow. Green woodworking is definitely a viable option for working deciduous trees in woodland which is being looked at as a community forest, because you're only taking out odd trees and you're also coppicing the wood. So most hardwoods, if you chop them down early enough, they will regrow from the stump. So you can take a tree and not actually be killing that tree off completely. It will come back, it will regenerate itself. Coniferous trees, you cut them down, that's it. In a deciduous situation, you can have a working woodland where you're keeping the integral forest, taking out bits and pieces, making a living out of it, but not having a huge impact on the structure of the woodland. The large log and smaller logging operations in Canada are not looking at using their deciduous trees. So I came home to find a way that was cheap to set up in terms of the initial capital outlay that you have to put in, that is kind to the forest and can provide a viable business and expand the overall business of this community forest.
Well, in this case, we don't have to walk far back from the community forest because Simon's workshop is very nearby, which is at a local farm. And so we're going to have a go at making something.
Okay. It's nice to get you started on something. So we need to haul down a chunk of wood.
Haul down a chunk of wood. You ready for this?
So now there's our half, because you always split into halves. Some people split into thirds as well, but generally it's best to split all your pieces of wood into halves. So what you're trying to do is you're now trying to make this piece of wood round and straighter. So I tend to go round and make the piece of wood as straight as I can, before I start chopping in to get to the piece that I actually want. Okay, so that's your sort of spoon there. So we want to split along that line.
Yes.
So this is a shaven horse.
Why is this bit your favourite bit?
Because it's with the lathe, you've got everything moving very quickly. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're sat here, you can literally watch as the grain changes. So you can actually see the actual nature of the wood and the patterns all changing. Yeah. And it's not very noisy. It's not very difficult. And I mean, I just the way that the wood changes in front of you, it's telling its history of how it grew and everything while you're actually making it. And because you're not moving it at speed, you just get to see everything change. It's just, I don't know, it's just pretty. Mm. I just like watching how all the grain changes and the patterns they make. If you pick up an old piece of furniture made from greenwood, and you know, whether it's made by somebody extremely reputable or not, I guarantee you that you'll find cleaving marks on it, where because we've cleft this wood, like there's a hollow just there, yeah? And so we might be able to turn that completely round, but there'll still be a little bit of a hollow there, and you'll see that on, people will leave that, they won't necessarily turn those away, and there might be odd little nicks and things in it where they've made a mistake with a chisel, and they'll leave it, because it's a sort of a history of how the piece was made. Mm. As well, there aren't any power tools, so you know, it is your work rather than, you know, your ability to use a piece of machinery, and the fact that everybody's capable of doing this, it's not really all that difficult. What we've done to this point is we've taken effectively a piece of firewood and cleaved it with an axe, and then worked it with a side axe to make it round. Then we've put it on a shaving horse, and with a draw knife we've again got it rounder and more to the size, the finished size that we want. And now we've actually got it sitting on our pole lathe. Now a pole lathe is just a lathe system for turning wood that is driven by a springy pole and a foot pedal. And as he pushes down with the foot pedal, it turns the wood so that you can cut it. And unlike a machine-powered lathe, which always turns in one direction, he's actually only able to cut 50% of the time. So if you're actually watching him work, you'll notice that he actually rocks backwards and forwards. So he's only working as he pushes with his foot, he's pushing into the wood, and then equally as he's taking his foot off, he's leaning away. And when he gets the dimension down, I mean he's making a spoon, so the end of it's going to stay fairly big, but if we were making chair parts, as you're getting down to the sort of diameter that you want for a chair part, you're actually getting about 1,000 revolutions a minute, which is actually quite quick. The one of the biggest advantages of using green wood is that it is very, very soft. So it does mean that we can keep all our tools very sharp. They stay sharp for a long period of time. If we were working what's considered to be more traditional wood, so dried wood, you'd be sharpening your tools two or three times a day, certainly, if not more frequently than that. The other thing is, because it is a soft material and you're not tearing at the wood, you really are cutting it. When he's finished on the lathe, it's completely smooth. There's no rough bits that need to be sanded off. There's no grain that's higher or anything like that. It is absolutely completely smooth. So, you know, in terms of the work that we have to put in preparing our tools and the extra work once the wood has been turned, we're actually at a minimal here.
So how long ago are we talking about that sort of chair making disappearing?
This sort of started to disappear big time between the First and Second World War, and then sort of after the Second World War, there were probably a few chair makers around, but they weren't really making much of an impact. Everybody thinks of the Industrial Revolution coming in sort of almost overnight, but it didn't really happen like that. Like everything, it sort of grew and got bigger and bigger, and it wasn't really until the sort of advent of much more motorisation and the use of petroleum as a driving fuel that the sort of local chair maker disappeared altogether. Up until the end of the First World War, all government chair legs, ladders, and tent pegs had to be made from cleft wood. In the old days, what the chair bodges would do would be, it used to be two jobs effectively. You had bodgers, who were the people who would go into the woods, cut down the timber, do to the point of the blank, for so they'd make a round blank, and they'd then sell that to the chair maker. The chair maker would allow that to dry for a while. He would then, that would then go oval. He would then take a round section out of the oval, yeah, but it's still cleft wood. And so the strength, he knew that the strength was there because it's not sawn wood, it's cleft wood. And then he'd take a dry section out of the oval piece that had been turned green originally and make chair legs from that and things. This sort of working really didn't disappear up until, yeah, between the two wars, really. And as I say, there's 2,000 pole lathers around now, most of whom are hobbyists, really. We're just trying to demonstrate that you can treat the planet kindly and make a living out of it at the same time.
It looks a fairly laborious process, this.
It is a little bit, which is why, again, you'll probably find that most spoons, rather than having a deep bowl like this, flat. We're hollowing out the bowl with gouge chisels, and like with all of the woodworking, you use big chisels to remove as much wood as fast as you can, and then you use progressively smaller chisels to make it so that the finish is what you're after. And I've taken over from Steve, who's been using a small chisel, and we're subsequently going to be here for most of tomorrow finishing his spoon. And if you've had any idea that this is a slow means of doing anything, the current world record from log to leg, from a round log to two identical chair legs, okay, is 9.5 minutes. And you'd be hard pushed to do it as quickly using conventional. So if you had a block of wood that you gave to somebody who then had to turn it into two chair legs, it would take them equally as long, if not longer, and they would end up with a leg that wasn't as strong and resilient as the green leg. Yeah, 9.5 minutes for two legs identical.
That'd be one person?
One person.
Stephen, tell me what it was like.
Well, making this spoon. Firstly, it was a real novelty making it on this contraption. But I could really sort of appreciate what they meant about this particular lathe and how it was all sort of like, you know, self-powered, and it didn't really have that sort of whirring sort of machine-like quality to it, because you were much more in touch with what you were making. It just made you much more in contact with the final result, and I could really sort of see the enthusiasm in the chap's eyes when he was sort of showing us his chair that he made, and it was just all made by his own hands, and it's just there's something in the final contact of that which is very, very special.